Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Justin Chalupka. Every week, we preview and review the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. Got pretty good stuff this week. Not a whole lot news-wise, but that's getting the cart before the horse. First things first, introduce Mr. Jason Polieff. How's it doing? How's it going? How you doing this week?
Doing very well this week, Justin.
Good.
Got a lot of books that we read this week. Looking forward to discussing them.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of stuff to be shared, but we're really only going to cull it back to just a few, ones that we really want to hit on and discuss through. And we also had, I know I had a pretty big solo stack as well. I don't know if you did.
I had a reasonable size solo stack as well.
Okay. But we're not going to get into those too much because there's not a whole lot we can discuss usually with things that we do solo unless there's something I read or something you read that we particularly want to know about, but I don't think we had any of that this week.
Well, actually, I did have two books that I pushed on you that were part of my solo stack.
That is true.
And,
they became shared books.
Yeah, they became shared books. And, first one of those, Batman Beyond Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
If you've read the Batman Beyond series before, if you were a fan of the TV show, they're starting a new series off. This is number one. It's a great jump on point. So, go ahead, pick it up. I enjoyed it, Justin.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it as well. I do think you really kind of have to know the Batman Beyond universe. It really helps getting into this book because if you don't know anything about it and you're trying to jump onto here, it may be kind of a rough start. Like, you may not know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, the Beyond universe has not restarted with the DC relaunch. So, yeah, definitely having watched the cartoon or read the previous series gets you in there.
Yeah, but just having a basic idea, like, who's Terry Guinness? What's going on with Bruce Wayne? Who's the current police commissioner? All that kind of stuff.
Which, well, if you're not familiar, though, some of that's a nice surprise. You see, you know, that Barbara Gordon's police commissioner, so that's kind of a fun surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Bruce is now an old man because it's the future. So, a lot of interesting stuff going on in there. The other book that I forced on you was Amazing Spider-Man number 680.
Yeah.
This is the beginning of the new arc that they're doing with Spider-Man. It's actually, they've changed this tagline to the galaxy's greatest superhero instead of Earth's because it's...
And this book has Octobots.
Yeah. This book has a lot of witty banter back and forth.
Oh, phenomenal. This is the funniest book I read this week.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Johnny Storm and Spider-Man.
Just going at each other. I mean, just nittering like a couple of old biddies.
Well, and Johnny Storm, who's been dead in the Marvel Universe, has come back and he just wants to go home and catch up on all the shows he missed, all the sporting events, and somehow he got stuck back listening to Rebecca Black's Friday.
And doing it in risky business style. Like he's sliding through the Baxter building in his skivvies and t-shirt, singing Friday.
So, yeah.
What? It's catchy.
Lots of humor going on in this book. And it's the beginning of a brand new story arc, that has had a big push from Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Ends of the Earth. It's the return of the Sinister Six versus Spider-Man. So,
yeah.
If you were thinking of getting Spider-Man, 680 is a great jump on point for that.
And it really is. I mean, even if you don't want to really get into this arc too much, this is a book that's good to pick up just for the sheer humor of it. It really is just super, super funny.
Yeah, a lot of fun with this book. So, but into some more meatier topics.
Yeah, those are our two kind of like honorable mentions for the week.
And again, we wanted to mention them because they're firsts, they're jump on points. So if you're looking for something new, those are two great starting points.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And one from each side of the street too, which that's kind of nice to have that.
Speaking of, you know, starting and ending points. Yeah, we've actually got an ending point in actually two of the three books that we're reading. We're going to go ahead and we'll start with Justice League, which is the end of the initiating arc for this. It's issue 6, and
this ends up the team coming together.
Yes.
This is the end of the genesis of the Justice League. I mean, they don't even know that they are a team at the end of this book, other than the fact that they told that they are, and they're like,
it's not till they're being honored as heroes, in a big ceremony a la Star Wars A New Hope, that they realize, wait, we were a team? So... This book had a couple of things that irked me. It starts off that you're seeing these everyday men running in fear, running for their lives, trying to protect their family and ushering them away from the danger.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from? It seemed an odd choice to use that to bookend this, and it seemed kind of an odd choice rather than just bringing us straight back into the story, which they'd been doing for the previous 5 issues. It almost seems like it's just filler material. Oh, we got to have another extra page or two. Let me bookend it this way.
It almost looks like, because they have, in this month's preview, they showed a new cover that is a takeoff of the ending bookend that you're talking about, where it's that Justice League book.
Yeah.
There's a cover later coming on that has that same book, but like with an RIP in blood splashed on it. So I almost wonder if they did the bookends almost as like they had the cover and they decided to
present
to do
the fictional book.
Right. To bring that in so it makes sense further on.
That is possible. And they are, DC is doing a lot of those small little things here. I just felt it was, if they'd have started this, the issue one arc with this family running for their lives and then they just see Batman coming in.
Yeah. I get it.
Then I think it would have, maybe you'd have forgotten them by now.
And see them come back would have been a nice, like, oh yeah, that's right, this is where we are kind of thing.
Yeah, it just kind of was a surprise starting point. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of, the art throughout this is solid, but there were a couple of poses that Wonder Woman was in was just kind of like,
yeah,
those
were
odd choices.
Yeah. The stabby pose where she's kind of like half turned, like she's bicycling in midair kind of thing.
Yeah. And there was another one where she was pulling, where she got her lasso around Darkseid and was pulling him, and that one was a nice full
page. I didn't have a problem with that one.
Yeah.
That wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad, it just didn't seem dominant, powerful enough.
To really be pulling him down off of his,
I don't think she was being shown as dominant, powerful enough in that.
Oh, okay.
She seemed, really hunkered down. Maybe it was designed to purposely show that, to show how powerful Darkseid is.
Possibly.
That felt a little odd. There were two panels that really irked because I'm like, wait, what am I actually looking at in here? It was just two small little panels. They were inside panels on the page. And one of them, I wasn't even sure who, because it was just a side look of a face. And because of the colorist doing a red wash over it, it took me to flip to the next page and back before I realized that
it was
actually Cyborg speaking. So.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
And the panel right above that was an odd one of Wonder Woman and Darkseid's fist. And again, it was just kind of
an odd. Like, did he hit her or did he, like, what? Yeah.
There was something really odd with those two panels. But aside from that, the art here was, I really enjoyed
it. Yeah. Jim Lee has done a good job throughout this run.
Yes.
So, I mean, you really can't argue with anything that he's done with this so far.
No. I'm nitpicking.
Yeah. And to come up with something bad for this book, you almost kind of have to. This ends not only this arc, but this is the 5 years before anything else. With issue 7, they're going to jump forward to the team having been
together. Are they going to jump forward?
That's what I've heard. Okay. That's my understanding of it, is it's going to be the leap forward of they've been doing this for a while now. Where are they now? Like, what have they gotten to? How are they interacting with each other? It's going to be a step forward of, okay, they've all met, now let's move to the Justice League. Them actually being that group.
Okay. There was one other thing that I did like, and this was actually Geoff Johns' part of the book, in that he finally actually showed us a side of Wonder Woman other than kill, kill, fight, fight, smash, smash. Mm-hmm. That she actually had more depth to her character. Yeah, she's talking about, it's not just about this being one person's Earth, it's everybody's.
Yeah.
It doesn't belong to just everybody. It belongs to everybody and no one. So there was more of a side of where her beliefs are, how she sees and views the world.
Now, you weren't reading her solo book, right?
No, I am not.
Okay, because I'm curious to how her character in here vamps with the character in her solo book.
Yeah,
which is Azzarello, right?
Azzarello.
Which his stuff is usually a little bit kind of kooky and out there anyways.
But I suspect...
We had Spaceman that we both read this week, which is Azzarello as well, and that's very indicative of his being, it is very weird type of stories that he comes up with.
Well, but I suspect from the things I've heard of the Wonder Woman book, and I might go ahead and get that in trade because it's coming out in another month or so in trade.
Yeah. Actually, a lot of the trades are going to be hitting all at once. They're going to,
it's going to be a 3 month period for the first arcs.
Yeah.
But depending on how long the arcs were, some of them are going to have five issues, six issues. Seven issues, some may even be longer than that.
Which I honestly have to wonder if DC's gonna see another big surge in sales because of all those trades coming out. Like the people that didn't want to buy the individual issues from week to week may have heard, oh, this one was really good and go buy the trade instead. Like I know I'm looking at potentially Batwing, maybe OMAC, and I think there's another one I was thinking about, Batgirl, I think.
With OMAC, you're likely to get the entire run.
I
suspect they're probably gonna suspend that and put all 8 issues together.
Same thing with Static Shock. Hawk and Dove.
Yeah.
So Black Hawks, I think, was the other one that got canceled.
So, but back to Justice League, mm-hmm. there was another aspect of this book besides the final battle with Darkseid. And that's actually where this book became even more interesting. At the end of this book, they introduce the two villain characters where they're actually discussing the honors that the Justice League is getting mm-hmm. and saying, if they're called superheroes, then they must be called supervillains.
Right.
But they're clouded in shadow, so we don't know exactly who they are. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, all we see of them is an emblem, and that's all we get.
So I predict we'll be seeing more of them.
Well, there's one other extra piece to this book as well, and that's we finally see and hear from the mysterious figure of Pandora.
Right. Okay, Pandora, if you don't know who she is, you probably have already seen her if you read Flashpoint. She mm-hmm. makes her first appearance there in the two-page spread at the end of that miniseries as the hooded woman staring down at everything that's going on.
Yeah. She's also made appearances in every single number one book of the original launches of the New 52.
Yes. So, yeah, she has been around, but this is the first actual story that she's actually being a part of.
Well, it's the first time she's spoken.
That too. Yeah. Otherwise, she's just been a face in the crowd.
Right.
And if you go back through all your number ones from the relaunch,
you'll find her.
You might have to look pretty hard. She's hard to find.
She's hidden a few, but she's there.
You're playing Where's Waldo. Now, this is interesting because it deals with her and the Phantom Stranger.
Yes.
And, yeah, you're a huge fan of the Phantom Stranger.
I didn't know anything about him until Darkest Night.
Okay.
And he had his own little side story in Darkest Night that I thought was phenomenal. I want to know why this character didn't get his own stuff. Because I thought he seemed awesome. They made him a pimp. And he's got the fedora, I mean.
And how's he doing in this book?
In this one, I think he's just as badass as he's been before.
He's an enigma. He's a mystery.
Yeah, well, the Phantom Stranger. I mean, you don't know anything about him. And actually, it's interesting because Pandora, one of her threats as the two of them are bantering, bickering, and battling, is she basically threatens to out him. Like, she's going to tell everybody what his name is, and he'll no longer be the Stranger. He'll be the Phantom Dick Butkus.
Well, in magic circles, your true name is power.
Right.
So being a Phantom Stranger, nobody knows his name. They don't have power over him. Mm-hmm. And they're clearly, I think, pushing this in that magic direction. Because the other character that they mention in here is the Spectre.
Yes.
And these are
we haven't seen anything from him in this new reboot.
Right.
In any of the books, which I find interesting, even insofar as Justice League Dark, which I would think if he was going to appear anywhere, that's where he would be. I mean, you haven't even seen him there. Not even a hint.
And there are a number of characters DC's purposely leaving out so they can play with them later, or they've already got plans for them.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's something going on with Pandora, and as her name suggests, Pandora is something out of the box. She's actually what reshaped the reality from Flashpoint.
From Flashpoint.
That's what's revealed in here. She's the one that determined how it came back together. Which, if she's still around, then DC really does have their out. Which they always said they didn't want to have an out as to how they could go back to the old universe. Well, she's the out. But
possibly.
To be fair, it's comic books. They just have the ultimate infinite crisis final.
They could flub it and do it if they felt it was really necessary.
But I don't think they're going to.
I don't think they will either. I think they've gotten enough success out of this that it would behoove them not to do something like that.
Eventually we will see something like that. Hopefully it'll be a good 10 years or longer before we see any sort of world shift going on here.
Which by then it'll be because it's necessary.
Yeah.
They'll want to shake things up.
And DC's done that for quite a while of every, 10, 15 years, they do a big shakeup so that they can readapt their characters. Times it's been adjusting their power level. Superman was way too powerful with Crisis on Infinite Earths. They brought his powers back down.
Right.
So they certainly are allowed to play. They've changed. Superman's parents were dead. Now then they were alive.
Now they're dead again.
Yep, they're dead. So
has that been confirmed? Is that?
Yeah, that definite? Is confirmed.
Okay.
Yeah. If you were reading Superman, they actually have the flashback of him being back and leaving the farm after his parents had died.
I knew he was leaving the farm. I didn't know it was because his parents had died.
But back to Justice League and this mini Pandora story at the end.
Mm-hmm.
She's got twin guns that look like they've got some sort of magic around them. They fire a magic bullet. So, yeah.
If Stranger gets nailed in the temple and then just, like, pops right back up like it's nothing.
Yeah, but they're definitely dealing with this, that they're some sort of magic. She's definitely on par with the Spectre and with the Phantom Stranger.
Yeah, these guys have always been,
these are elevated almost at a level above the standard DC heroes.
They're like Phantom Stranger, Pandora, evidently by her interaction with them. Spectre, definitely. Eclipso kind of falls into this category to a certain degree. These are deific characters. These guys are of, like, God's fist.
And they even kind of hint that there is, you know, a whole group of them that are, that got, that,
well, in
that,
one of the crises,
deity level.
In one of the crisis books, I don't recall which one, there's a bunch of people, like, standing in a circle. It's in, the Alex Ross one, Kingdom Come.
Kingdom Come.
They're all standing around talking about whether reality was a goof up, something like that. And I remember it was Spectre, Phantom Stranger, I want to say actually, the Wizard Shazam, the old man, not to be mistaken with what's going to come later.
Marvel.
Right.
Captain Marvel, who will become renamed Shazam.
And there were a couple others as well who I don't recall, who were,
But
they're these, like, big guys. Yeah.
The demigod level, perhaps.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that shape the outer forces of the DC universe. And I think we're going to see that is where the story is going to go. Now, this is just an intro to Pandora. We're actually going to find out more about her Free Comic Book Day.
Right.
Jim Lee, Jeff Johns, and others. We talked about this when we covered MegaCon.
Mm-hmm.
The Free Comic Book is going to be a story about Pandora. We'll find out more about her than we did in this 3-4-page backup story for Justice League.
Which, something to mention, for whatever reason, this didn't click with me before. Free Comic Book Day is on Cinco de Mayo.
All right.
Yeah.
Comics and beer.
Comics and Coronas. How awesome is that? So we have comics, we have Coronas, and now we have the Cape.
Yes. Okay. Cape is, based on a story by Joe Hill,
originally a short story, I should mention.
Yeah. Yes, short story.
Yeah, and this is kind of interesting.
He did a standalone comic for it.
Yeah, but a short story
from
Stephen King's son
being
made into a longer version. This is not totally unlike what, you know, stuff his father has done, where he wrote a short story and something big came out of it, say, like, a couple movies.
Yeah.
Lots of movies, actually, come to think of it. Stand By Me, Green Mile, Shining.
Yeah.
All short stories that became big things. And now Joe Hill writes a short story and it turns into...
At that size, they're
the perfect size. A medium thing. I won't say this is a big thing, but it's a medium thing.
Well, Joe originally wrote the original Cape solo story, which, truthfully, I think I enjoyed better than this follow-up mini that Jason Ciaramarella added to. But that's not to say this wasn't good.
This all the way through, it's only a 4-issue mini, so it's not real big, and it was filled with everything that was in the short story, as far as tone, as far as idea, as far as...
It was a wonderful sequel to the original.
Yes.
But I think part of the reason why I loved the original was the ending of it. And this one...
That it was that wide open ending of, oh man, this could go anywhere from here.
Yeah.
Whereas this ends very final. Like, you will do nothing else with this.
But it's also the ending that I expected, and you kind of saw it both in foreshadowing in this book specifically, as well as if you look back and thought about what had been happening in the previous issues, you knew exactly where this book was going to end.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing in here that I would say is unexpected, but there's nothing necessarily in here that is unwelcome either.
Yes.
Although I will say that one... You just flip past it. There's a double spread panel in here that
it's
phenomenal. If you look, really, really look through it, you see all kinds of things going on in here, and it actually makes me wonder if there was something about the Cape itself that kind of made him this way.
It very well could be. Yeah, it's it's actually a look inside of Eric's head. What is going on inside of his head? How does he see the world that makes him do this? Everything from him as a little boy running away with the cape. You've got drugs, paraphernalia.
You've got the plane his mother was on. You've got him and his very much ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
It's It's a fantastic spread. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on there.
Actually, from looking in here, and you can't really see much of it, there's, you can clearly see octopus tentacles.
Which is that, that's what makes me wonder if it's the cape that's evil. Like it's a,
and there's
a Lovecraftian sort of, it certainly like a maw underneath it.
Yeah, there's a maw that looks like it's maybe attached to those tentacles, like a,
like
Cthulhu.
There's something else that's like got into his head and it's making him do these things.
Because there's also, there's other demonic-esque images in here. So, there's definitely something going on in here. And yeah, it could be the cape. It could be he broke something loose in his skull when he fell from the tree.
And he's just that whacked out there?
Yeah. But yeah, this definitely puts a final nail in the coffin. You won't be able to have a true sequel to this.
Right.
Without completely reinventing the story, the arc. I loved the art in this book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Just that two-page spread that we were just talking about is just a beautiful example of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this whole series has been done marvelously.
And they're very, I think they've started, promoing the trade for this. So, if you haven't gotten it in serial, pick up the trade. It's totally worth your time.
Yeah, if you're interested, go pick up the original one shot. Don't read this without having read the one shot.
Good point.
It is a direct sequel. You won't understand what's going on without having read that initial one shot.
Yeah.
And that was originally done by Joe Hill himself. And then this was a follow-up to it.
You know, just a plug for plug's sake, if you're going to pick up the Cape one-shot, pick up his other one-shot, Kodiak. Because that was very good as well. That one had to do with a guy claiming to be a magician up in Alaska and all kinds of stuff like that. Another very, very good solo that he did.
Somewhere along that, I missed Kodiak, so I'll have to grab that one from you.
Yeah, well, I got to go chase it down first.
Okay. Maybe that's why I haven't read it then.
Probably.
All right. And then we got Voltron, which, Voltron Force, We started reading this, I think we both got it for the
nostalgia factor. Yeah. Like, we're going to say, okay, we're going to go revisit this. And this is totally nothing what either of us, I think, expected.
No. It's definitely its own book,
mm-hmm.
and it's creating its own history. It's a continuation of story.
Yes.
But it is, so if you had an idea of what Voltron was and was doing before, this starts a new chapter. And as long as you've got a basic idea, Voltron is the defender of the universe.
It's
five lions
that
turns
together
into a giant robot man with a flaming sword. And yeah. And once you've got, and they battle Robeasts. You know, once you've got that idea in your head.
I was going to go to the robot chicken direction and talk about him getting served by a Robeast, but I'm just going to leave that one alone. I'll leave that one right there.
Yeah. So if you got that idea, you pick up this book. The first two issues make it a little bit rough. This is issue 3, and it takes issue 1 and issue 2 and says, come here,
it really does.
Here's what this all means.
Yeah.
Because you're left kind of in the dark with issue 1
and 2. Well, there's
lots
of little things that sort of like happened in those first couple books, that there's like a little thing here that makes you go, wait, what? And another little thing there that makes you go, wait, what? What? What the are they doing? Yeah. And this, like you said, it congeals very, very well into this now cohesive story.
Yeah, and you need to read this issue in order to get that cohesiveness.
Which, I would say if nothing else, this issue is what's going to make people want to read the rest of the series.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame because I think there were people that went out there, picked up issue 1 and issue 2 and dropped it. I know I was almost one of those people. I almost didn't pick this book up this week. But went and got it out of my stack and it was like, you know what? I've already got it. They pulled it for me. I'll go ahead and get it. And I'm glad I did because I love where this book is headed. It's got some really interesting things.
Well, let's hit on a couple of things that are going on here. First off, we have the first sort of WTF moment is Voltron speaks of its own accord at one point.
That is earlier in
I think it was first issue.
First issue, yeah.
Yeah, first issue. That happens, and you're thinking, wait, Voltron has never talked before. What are they doing here?
Yeah.
Number two is there's a lot of flashback in this.
And actually, we talked about it when we reviewed 1 and 2, is when did they get Voltron having its solo? This explains it. You have a reason for it now. Okay, number two.
One of the other things is, in these flashbacks, one of the main characters in it is a Dr. Zarkon, who's a guy from Earth who's helping the military with basically like anti-Xeno technology, trying to prevent aliens from invading, and this is occurring in the middle of an alien invasion. And for those who know the history, Zarkon is evil King Zarkon, right. the bad guy.
They even mentioned King Zarkon in the book and show, which is clearly a different look, because the Dr. Zarkon that they're showing in the flashbacks is
human.
Blonde-haired, human.
And looks a lot like Willem Dafoe, actually. I don't know if you picked up on that.
And Zarkon from even the cartoons, from when they show him in the comic books, purple skin, finned ears, like a lizard.
Yeah, he's the anime version of Zarkon.
So, you've definitely got what are, ridges on the forehead. It's definitely
alien.
Two different beings.
Yeah.
When you look at it. And what we find out.
This is now explained as well.
Yeah. Which, I know I had the theory from issue one, that's the same person, but it wasn't until this book that they nailed it down.
Yeah, and said, in fact, yes, it is.
And they also, and as we said, they also introduce Alec, Alec is the Voltron, that strange voice that had Voltron, that was controlling Voltron.
Actually, I'm not sure if he's actually Voltron himself or if he's specifically the Black Lion.
Well, he's the sixth pilot, is actually how they refer to him. He's that hidden pilot that is actually controlling the entire Voltron in and of its own accord, which he probably piloted the Black Lion originally. And actually what we find out is that Alec was there when Voltron was created and designed. It's partially his design.
Right. Well, and the other thing too is that the pilots themselves, the current pilots, the five of them, when Voltron did speak, they had no clue. Which that was nice to finally hear that they didn't understand what was going on either. So that's a little bit of validation on the parts of the readers of, okay, we're not the retarded ones. Everybody was in the dark about this.
So there's definitely some interesting thing as they revealed that Alec was there to help design, and he actually designed it with Zarkon.
Yeah, so, they built it together.
Yeah, they built it as lions to defeat the Robeasts, but the idea that Alec came up with was to have them combine to form one larger, more powerful robot.
That can match them for size and power.
As well as the individual lions to fight them.
And the other side of that, too, is the whole thing of Voltron is he is a combination of magic and technology. Earth didn't have magic. It relied on technology, so their technological advances far surpassed what they had on Arrus. And Arrus, being more obviously magically based, excelled in that. So now, with these two races coming together, they're creating this mix that's going to be more powerful than
the Robeasts.
Right.
And eventually, Zarkon and his Robeasts, as Zarkon eventually becomes Emperor.
I think what makes me wonder about this now is that who is behind the Robeasts in these flashbacks?
And I think we're going to find out. I think that's where this is going to head, is how Zarkon worked with Alec and created Voltron, and then how he turns, how he becomes the evil Emperor.
Part of the conversation, I think, has revealed that already. I mean, there's a pretty good, catalyst that could be the cause of that that's already been introduced.
Yeah. But, it's still, they're definitely, congealing the entire story. It is a little bit irksome to try and figure out, okay, at which year am I in?
They do a pretty good job of demarking it.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job with demarking it. Plus, because things like Zarkon looks like a demon, Zarkon looks like a human, you start to recognize fairly easily
where you are.
Which period you are. But going through the first two books in particular, it made it a bit more difficult.
Yeah.
So, and then the last thing is, apparently there's a defense program set up on Earth where they expected Zarkon to come back. And Zarkon, it's revealed, Zarkon and Alec used to be a part of this when it first started, and now they're there to be there in case Zarkon comes back and defeat him. And that's where Voltron has headed, while they're missing the Voltron force, I should say, because they're missing Voltron itself.
Yeah, because he got captured first issue.
So, there's a whole thing going on here of, how are they going to get back to Voltron? How are they going to free it up? So there's a current story arc, there's a past story arc, and between the two of them, you got a lot of
It's a very, very good untold origin story. This makes me actually think of like...
It was well plotted out. Yeah. Definitely forethought in this.
This makes me think a lot of the secret origin stories that DC did not too long ago. Yeah. They did the GL Secret Origin, Superman Secret Origin. This, to me, feels like a Voltron Secret Origin book, which I think will do very good things for Dynamite to have this in here.
Well, not only that, but they've also got the Voltron Year One coming out, which is going to be the first adventures when it's going to start off with the Voltron Force first taking command of Voltron and their early adventures. And I still think it might be
that's Dynamite as well, right?
Yeah, Dynamite. I think it's Dynamite. Just this is a popular property. Let's add something else onto the fire. And I think they might be pushing.
They
too
did
far.
That. I'll do that with the John Carter books. There's only four of them now, I think.
Well, they've done that with all their series. In fact, there was a Gutters about it.
Oh yeah.
So, all right.
I love Gutters. They have such great stuff.
All right. I think that those are really the books that we really felt were worth discussing. Not that there weren't other good books out there, but those had some meat to them or some revelation that was worth it. Yeah.
Well, it was either things starting, things ending, stuff that's important to note.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Very, very kind of newsish as far as these comic books are concerned.
Yeah. And speaking of news, let's go ahead and head into that.
Yep.
So, one of the things which actually you had shared out, and I had to go ahead and post that, comic books in the classroom. This is a look at how comic books are being used in university classrooms for teaching. So, now, what's interesting is it's been shown that people actually learn better from comic books because you're using both, reading and you're using the images, which helps impress it on the mind in two different ways.
Well, people always see that you have auditory learners and you have visual learners. So, by having this, you can kind of get the best of both worlds. By reading the text...
Read it aloud, you get auditory learners.
Well, you get around, but even when you read text, it activates the auditory parts of your brain. As opposed to seeing diagrams and seeing graphics, which tend to activate the right side of your brain, as opposed to text, which is left side.
It does engage both sides because, you have the literal and then the visual that goes with it. And it's interesting to see what some of these classes are doing. You get everything from biology. You've got some that are looking at them as actual literature. You've got, I think they said organic chemistry, geology. Uh-huh. Yeah. And these aren't small universities. Yeah.
Oh, no. We have Texas Tech. There's, I think I saw UF on there.
Yeah. Eastern Penn Illinois, State. Penn State. Yeah.
These aren't exactly, tiny. This is University of Phoenix that we're talking about here. I mean, these are. Well, I mean, Penn State's, we're talking,
big, University of Florida, these are all big universities, Well, some are big, some are small, but they're all using comics to help enhance the learning experience. Some are actually creating the comics, and it's part of the curriculum. One was actually medical doctors, and they have them take and create these comics as part of learning, and they say that the doctors that are graduated from this have a much better bedside manner and better rapport with their patients when they graduate than the students that haven't taken that elective class.
Well, and we should note that this isn't horrifically
groundbreaking.
Comics, but the use of sequential art in the classroom is not new.
No.
Probably the biggest example is Spiegelman's Mouse.
And while that sometimes is taught in, social studies, sociology classes, or even World War II history.
Well, no, it's also taught in classes. Lit.
It is taught in lit. But these are actually taking it outside of a literature realm, which is where most comics that are taught are taught in. They're taught it from a literature, creative writing point of view. Yeah, these are actually taking it, and it's not even new to them. I mean, most of us have looked at a science notebook. And they show you four pictures of a cell splitting apart. You see the cell split. You see the nucleus split.
There you go. Sequential art.
Sequential art. This is just taking it to that next step of doing more than just a four-picture diagram of
the
cell splitting.
I will say that my favorite sequential art in a textbook has got to be the penguin in a wheelbarrow.
There was a penguin in a wheelbarrow?
Physics class. I kid you not, our physics textbook had penguins, or not wheelbarrow, excuse me, in a wagon. Penguins and Wagons.
Was it Tux?
I don't know.
Chilly Willy?
Chilly Willy probably closer. I mean, they didn't have bow ties on or anything, but...
Was it Bugs' friend?
Oh, no, I don't even know what his name is. I know what you're talking about, but...
Yeah, he does have a name.
Here's the other thing, too. A lot of medical textbooks, or actually a lot of medical study aids, there's an entire series called, you know, whatever the topic is, Made Ridiculously Easy. And all of them use very graphic, very, almost more like,
It is Chili Willy. Bugs' friend is Chili Willy.
Oh, go figure. Very much like the, I have Spiegelman stuck in my head, and it's not him, Scott McCloud, his, Reinventing and Understanding Comics series, the Made Ridiculous Easy series uses that same type of mentality where it's the sequential art and lots of mnemonics, lots of graphical representations. Nursing ones are very particular about that because they'll take symptoms. People talk about, you know, the guy looks barrel-chested or jaundiced or this or that and the other thing, and they'll give you this graphical representation of it along with the actual biology behind it as well, the physiological reasons of why it's occurring. So, like I said, I mean, using sequential art for education is certainly nothing new. I mean, it's not novel, but the fact that these generated or existing commercial products being used in the classroom like that is novel in the sense that it's getting more and more acceptance in academia.
Yeah. Okay, actually, sorry, Bugs Penguin is not Chili Willy, is from Woody Woodpecker, which is what I had originally thought. They have not apparently named Bugs' friend the Woodpecker, at least not that I can find.
Could not let that go, could you?
No, I couldn't.
You had to know.
I did. Right.
Okay, next thing we were going to hit on is that Valiant Comics, which was a comics publisher around in the early 90s during the comic book bubble, the licenses were purchased and kind of shuffled around in a lot of different companies.
Yeah. At one point they wound up with Activision. So a lot of these you'll actually recognize from games, because Activision put them out as games. If you remember the comic books, they actually were rivaling DC for size of comics at one point in time.
Oh, I didn't know they had gotten that big.
Yeah, they got pretty big. They've got two comics that they've already announced coming out. Man-O-War, which you're probably starting to see some of that stuff pop up at your comic shop now. That comes out, I think, May is the first issue of that. Mm-hmm. And they've got some gimmick where it's got a QR code, you scan it, it'll come up with a YouTube video of a mouth talking, you place that on the cover, and it looks like Man-O-War is talking to you.
Yeah.
It's cool, but it's a gimmick.
It's a total gimmick.
Supposedly, they're actually going to have audio for all the books. You just scan a QR code and it can read you all the audio, which is great if you're reading, I think, Batman Adventures, Tiny Titans, Super Friends. You know, if you got a kid, that would be great because you can, you know, give them your iPhone, your Android phone, have them show them how to scan the app. They can sit there and let the phone read them the comic book.
It's like the free version of the Leapster or Leapfrog tag things.
Yeah, I remember I actually had a Return of the Jedi record. And it would play, the record would play and it would read the text out of the picture book that came with it. And I'd sit there and put on my record player and read my Return of the Jedi book.
Mine was Empire.
Empire.
And the turn the page sound was R2. Okay, don't turn the page.
I wish I still had that record.
Me too.
But back to Valiant Comics. The other book that they got is Harbinger, which is another one of their early books that they'd come out with. And Harbinger 1 has been announced now. I believe it's coming out the month after Man-O-War. So Man-O-War will be about a month. Yeah. If we got the dates right on.
Right. Well, who is actually putting these out now? Because it's not that Valiant is back on its own. Yeah. They're actually being pushed by somebody else, and I can't recall who.
Yeah, Valiant has been purchased. Actually, I believe it's Valiant Entertainment is what the company is now calling themselves.
Okay.
So, yeah. But they...
Okay, yeah.
There are no actual designs on exactly what we're going to see after Harbinger, after Exo Man of War. Sony recently announced Bloodshot will be getting a movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that would make a likely candidate to be a good third book to come out. So, with that, other of the main heroes that you may have heard of, Ninjak, Turok, Magnus the Dinosaur Hunter, Eternal Warrior, Secret Weapons, they did have a very sizable stable.
Yeah, big stable of guys. And like I said, and a lot of these got turned into video games. I mean, people will probably more likely recognize Turok from the game than they will from the comic.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I remember Turok Dinosaur Hunter, yeah. And I was kind of surprised when I saw the video game come out going, wait, I haven't seen this comic book in years. How has he got a video game?
Right.
That explains it is the,
I have to admit, I only had one Valiant comic. Ninjak.
Ninjak.
Yes. And I had it with the foil cover. The foil. Really nice one too, much stained glass.
Valiant comics are the ones that introduced those foil covers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had Solar.
After that, everybody did it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, Solar was one that I'm pretty sure I had.
Mm-hmm.
I probably still
Magnus, you said you knew.
Yeah. Magnus, I remember, seeing lots of stuff. I never read it. I think I read Solar. I don't think I read most of the Valiant books, but, there certainly was, a lot, so.
Yeah, I was deep in Marvel at the time, because I had all and you still have these, Marvel collector cards.
Yep. Oh yeah.
I have a feeling that'll probably be a nostalgic kick for a lot of people listening to this. They'll go, oh yeah.
Yeah, I have Marvel Series 1, Series 2, Series 3, Marvel Masterpieces, Series 1, Series 2.
You know, full the sets. Masterpieces I never thought looked really very much like Masterpieces. Some of them really did.
Some of them did.
A lot of them did not.
It depended on the Marvel,
kind of the artist, and depending on the character. Some of the characters, I'm sorry, you just cannot make them look anything but goofy. Yeah. Kang the Conqueror, he will always look like a goofball to me.
Jusco did a wonderful job with most of them. The Hildebrandt brothers did a wonderful job with most of them.
Mm.
So, I did enjoy the cards. Yeah, I've got them. They're all stashed away. Yeah, I've got a Batman series of collector cards.
Oh, from the movie?
No, not from the movie. These are just Batman cards. I think I have some cards from the Batman movie, the original Tim Burton.
Yeah.
With Michael Keaton as Batman, Jack Nicholson Joker.
Didn't McDonald's do a promo for a while on one of the later ones? I think it was Forever, maybe, or Batman and Robin? That, cause they had the hero sandwich that came out at the same time. It was it was like a burger sub.
That seems disturbingly correct. So.
And they actually gave out cards along with it too, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
So. Alright.
Enough going down that
rabbit hole.
Well, I was gonna say that bad alley of memory lane.
Well, speaking of memory lane, mm-hmm. something that might be coming out of there is.
Good way to put it.
Rumored of a third Ghostbuster movie.
Yeah.
And, by rumor, meaning Dan Aykroyd wants to make it.
Badly.
He's got Harold Ramis signed back up. You know, he's got all of the major players.
But.
Except Bill Murray.
Bill Murray. Moranis?
I don't know if he was trying to get Moranis back.
Because Moranis has said he's not, the only time he's poked his head up.
But Moranis was never a major player.
No.
He was a side comic foil.
Well, no, he was fairly big in two. He had a bigger role in two.
Actually, I'd argue his role in one because he was the symbol of the villain coming in
yeah,
one.
But it wasn't him. He was a dog for most of it. In two, it's actually him. You know, he's walking around with the big slime cannon like, come on guys, let's do it.
He does get...
Anyways, Moranis hasn't poked his head out of Canada since Brother Bear, the Disney movie.
He doesn't have to do anything that he doesn't want to. Actually, that's what Aykroyd has said about Murray. Murray is getting paid to go do pro-am golf tournaments.
Yeah.
And he gets to hang out with his family, see his kids, see his grandkids. He has no reason to come and do a movie that doesn't personally interest him. And, you know, from what the rumor mills are saying, Murray said nobody wants to see but four old guys guys running around in, you know, in suits.
Which, I have to admit that with the last indie movie, I'm inclined to agree.
Now, there was also rumors of a indie movie that didn't get made that would have been really good.
That would have not sucked.
Yeah. But there's also rumors of a follow-up for the Crystal Skull indie movie. So, now, based on how indie's done, you know, good movie, bad movie, good movie, bad movie. We're due for a good one now. Just like
I was going to say, it's following the Star Trek pattern.
Star Trek does evens, Indiana Jones does odds. We'll have to see.
I don't know.
But back to Ghostbusters, there's been talk of can they do the movie without Bill Murray? Of course, Aykroyd and some of the others don't really want to. They want him involved.
Yeah.
But they, apparently they can't get him interested in the project. They've said they might do him as a CGI ghost. They might recast him as another actor. I think as a fan, I don't want to see either of those.
No, I don't want to see him recast.
Yeah. I would rather see, have them say his character is dead. Yeah. With the Rocky Balboa movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They couldn't get, the actress who played Adrian back. She didn't want to come back. So it actually made a wonderful turn point for the movie by having her dead.
Yeah.
And you could see how that affected it. Yeah. It added a whole new level. It let, you know, Rocky develop as a character and be a bit detached and come back and find, you know, more, there's more to his life.
Yeah. Which if they have his character die, I mean, and one of the things that they mentioned is having him show up as a CG ghost. This would actually be a nice, interesting change because I don't think the Ghostbusters characters have dealt with, you know, busting a ghost that's somebody that they knew personally.
Yeah.
Well, which that would be a very interesting sort of almost ethical debate of, you know, look, it's Venkman. How do we trap Venkman? It's Venkman, man. I mean, how do we do that?
Personally, I don't even want to see that. I'd rather they, you know, just say he's died, he's moved away.
Yeah, he's out.
And
it's, you know.
Just, you know. Part of this was they're supposed to be handing this off, is they're talking about having the power packs handed off to a new generation of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
So just leave him out of it and have a character of the new generation that can kind of be that smartass that Venkman was.
Mm-hmm.
And leave it at that and not have a specific role model for him to look up to of the original Ghostbusters.
Or take it in a new direction. Have somebody be themselves and do it well.
Maybe even talk about, you know, they show up, they go out there, you see an actor as Venkman, but it's just, you know, from the back, so you don't really see who it is. And that person dies early on, and that's the catalyst for them deciding they need to find younger Ghostbusters. So.
Have them Shemp it?
Yes.
If it's
5 minutes or less of the movie, I would be fine with it. Yeah.
Don't shemp it unless you're gonna like completely and utterly cheese it and do it really, really.
Should they have him shave his head?
I don't care, you know, whatever. But you know, if you're gonna shemp it, then do it in a way that's gonna make me go, okay, that's funny. All right, I'll give you that.
They might make some smart ass comments about it. But they do shemping before. I mean, there's, you know, Bruce Lee had his part shemped. There are parts of, yeah, the Batman movie with Heath Ledger that they had to have shemped. Yeah. Granted, the actor actually died as opposed to didn't want to come back and do a movie. But it's something that can be done. Yeah. I think it's, and if they do it just to establish something really quick, then, you know, as a plot point of, We're getting too old for this shit.
Yeah. They could do it without having to shove it. I mean, they could just put it in as story and leave it there. You don't have to show it.
They could just not even have him in there and do it.
Why even bother doing that? Unless they're gonna make a good, like I said, unless they're gonna cheese it out in a way that's, they do it to get the yucks. I mean, that I could see making sense. But anyways. We did have a couple other things we were looking at talking about, but I don't know if we want to get into those. I think we can probably...
we're just talking about ghosts.
Okay.
All right, so, yeah, with the ghosts, you know, horror, and there's actually awards that are given out for horror comics.
And these are relatively new. They haven't been out for very, very long. They're called the Ghastly Awards.
So, yeah, and there's not much to these, that they're given out for what this group of people feel are the best in horror, terror, frighten you, style comics. So.
And I think it's more than just comics as well. I think the Ghastlies do go to movies and other things as well.
Well.
I could be wrong though. But anyways, a lot of the nominees are things that aren't particularly surprising. We have things like Walking Dead, Hellblazer, Hellboy, Lock and Key, which makes my heart go pitter-patter.
Yeah. Yeah, 68, which is the zombies in Vietnam.
Yeah. Actually, looking through a lot of these, I should be hanging out here more often because I read most of these. Well, yeah, you, at least as far as
this is right up your alley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I Vamp.
In Old Man. Hey, I Vamp is not up my alley. I Zombie is not I Vampire.
Animal Man.
Animal
is...
Man, Witch Doctor, which I love. The Vault, which I picked up, didn't particularly care for.
Hellblazer is right. Is definitely one that you love.
Well, Hellblazer is one of the things that got me back into comics. It was a mix of that and Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Because I started picking up the Hellblazer trades at Barnes & Noble because they had them there. Yeah. And specifically, I can even tell you exactly, it was Empathy is the Enemy was the one trade that I got. Because it was a standalone. It didn't have to do with anything in the series. Awesome art. Great story. People, go find that one if you can. It's kind of difficult to get your hands on these days, though. So if you find it, grab it. It's a phenomenal find.
Right, but these cover all of your basic categories. Best ongoing series, best miniseries, best one-shot.
Yeah. Original graphic novel, archival collection. And they even get into the individual inkers, letterers, colorists.
Yeah,
as well.
Writer. Yeah. Joe Hill for Lock and Key. You know, that's one of our favorites. And Kirkman for Walking Dead. There's another huge name on that list.
I think Schneider.
Gabriel Rodriguez for Lock and Key. Just for stuff that we've continued to talk about.
Yeah, I thought. Terry Moore for Rachel Rising, which that doesn't come out for a few months yet.
So.
And that's one actually I'm looking at picking up because that looked very interesting when I saw it in previews. I like it. They have a category for webcomic. That makes me, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think webcomics get nearly the accolades that they deserve.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of stuff in here, and they're actually doing a Hall of Fame induction for Graham Ingalls. So
I just realized who's not on here, and I'm kind of bummed about it.
Who?
Brimstone.
Oh, yeah, that's the Old West Zombies. Old West Zombies, yes.
Yeah, if nothing else, for art. Art on that was phenomenal. Yeah, what are these guys thinking?
But, yeah, and they actually have a large variety. It's not just Marvel, DC.
Oh, yeah, it's all over the place.
Dark Horse, IDW, Image,
Archaea.
Boom.
Yeah.
Avatar.
Yeah. Which Avatar doesn't see a whole... They do a lot of horror stuff, but they don't see a whole lot of action.
So...
I'm trying to think if it was Avatar or Aspen that was Wormwood. I think that was Avatar.
So, but, yeah. Check them out. Ghastlies.blogspot.com. They have the list of the nominees. So, yeah. And, you know... I think it's great that they're recognizing that they found, yeah, sure, you've got most of these categories that are done for comics as an industry. They're focusing on the best of the horror comics.
Which, again, is another thing that you don't see a whole lot of accolades going specifically to at that one genre.
But the interesting thing is this is actually the first year for the Ghastlies. 2011 will be the first year for the Ghastlies. I was just looking to see who past winners are.
I was going to say, I thought this was actually older than that. I thought it went a few years back.
Nope. It is kind of cool to, see that there are people that are getting together that are dedicated to finding the best in horror. Because it is a genre that I think is underrated.
And there are horror conventions, there are sci-fi conventions, so we should, I think, see best sci-fi comic, we should see best fantasy comic, we should see...
Yeah, best Capes and Cowls,
noir,
crime.
Let's get some nods to the other specific genres, so that way, if they get those accolades, they can get readers. They get readers, they can grow. As they grow, we can get closer to that future of having a comic shop where there are enough comics on the shelves that you can break it down by genre and say, instead of by publisher, and say, okay, oh, you like horror comics, go check over there. Oh, you like adult graphic novels, go over there. Oh, you like romance, go over there.
You want metaphysical.
That's, in Reinventing Comics, it's something that Scott McCloud brought up that, to me, sounds like a great utopian future for comics. I just don't know if it'll ever get there.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be hard. And who knows what the comic shop of the future is going to look like with digital publishing coming through.
Yeah. We may see shops, unfortunately, slowly disappear.
Yeah. And we may see a whole bunch of digital gimmicks showing up throughout.
That push people back to original print.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that they'll put... So I'm sorry, but the talking cover is not going to push me back from print if I was already doing a digital version. But, yeah. And I also don't think people are going to fall in for foil covers or hologram covers.
Yeah.
It's great to see that once in a while. And I know that there's still people out there that want to get all the different variant covers, but most collectors now have said, I want a book. I don't want to get three different covers of the same story.
Yeah. Well, more than that, too, we had mentioned this before, the idea of pushing comics back to pulp. Get them off of the fine print. Get them back on pulp pages that they can make them cheap, reproduce them quickly.
Well, the story is that, you know, pulp is actually more expensive now. That's one of the things that DC said when they did Wednesday Comics, is it was actually more expensive to do newsprint than it was to do the standard stocks that they're doing now, because newsprint is dying. There's newspapers are going out of business. There's less newspapers doing it, so they're making less newsprint. So it's actually more expensive to use newsprint.
Although, but I wonder if it would be a faster process to actually, because
well, the other
to
thing
not do
is,
color, to do the black and white, to get things out.
If they were just doing really black and white, you have an argument there. Because, but with that pulp paper, I mean, actually, Spaceman is actually printed on that.
Yeah.
Which is the first comic book I've seen in years that does that.
iZombie was originally as well.
One of the things...
Actually, I think still is, come to think of it.
One of the things that the reasons why they don't is the print process. They're able to get better color reproduction, able to do blends, and they're actually able to use the computer-graded stuff in the on the finer paper than they can do if they're printing, if they have to print it to newsprint. It limits what they can do. It sets them back towards that four-color process.
Yeah.
So... I don't think you're going to see that. What would be interesting, and actually something that DC is supposed to be doing, is they're putting together a collection of the number ones. So you can buy a book that has six of the different relaunch titles.
Oh, okay.
Then you can get a second. Now, very similar to what manga does, where they give out a book each week, and it has, you know, six or eight different stories.
Digest, essentially.
Yeah. So that may, I think, help a lot, because I could pick up a book that I know is going to have three or four books that I want to read in it, and then I can read one or two that I don't necessarily care about, but I might get interested in it.
Right.
And if it's at the right price, you know, if I'm not paying for six issues, if I'm paying for three or four, I'll be willing to pay for the three that I want and read the others.
Right.
Or skip over them.
And depending upon when they put it out, you read all these number ones, you go, oh, hey, this is one I didn't think I would like, but it's actually really good. The trade is out. Let me go get the entire first arc.
Yeah.
Read that. Get it if it's good enough. Oh, hey, I really like this. I'm going to start subscribing.
So, definitely there's some ways that they can look at to try and bring things back. I wish that they were trying to push themselves into places like Barnes & Noble more, which I don't... While Borders died, I don't think we're going to see Barnes & Noble die. We might see the stores shrink. What we may see is a lot less multiple copies and a lot more single editions, and a lot less facing of the product, so you could fit more product in a smaller space from Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you're going to see a physical bookstore. I think people are always going to have a want to go to a physical store.
I think we're never going to see...
just ordering from Amazon.
Yeah, cereals are pretty much out of Barnes & Noble by and large anyways. I mean, they still have their racks, they still have a spinner, I think. But trying to get individual issues from a retail store like that just isn't going to happen. If you're going to Barnes & Noble, you're going for trades. Or collections. I mean, that's what you're going to get there. You're going to get the books, not the issues.
Which I think a digest version would do really well at, like, a Barnes & Noble, because you could put that on the magazines.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, even if you're doing, like, two or three issues as in an actual magazine style as opposed to a comic style or a digest style, put that on the magazine rack. You get people that go in and out of there all the time.
It's going to get coffee.
Yeah, I think they'll get it, and they'll pick it up, and they'll buy it as something to read while they're getting their coffee and their scone. Yeah, while they're just getting something because they're going to be on a plane
somewhere.
Pick
it up and flipping through it while they're in line or something and go, oh, hey, you know, I'll get this too. Well, anyhow, how do we get over there from Ghastly Awards?
Yeah, we were talking about how to get comic sales out there.
Yeah.
Other ways of presenting comic books, you know.
Okay. That is all we have for this week. All of our contact information can be found at about.me/comicbooktesseract. Every week we are found on thecomicbooknerd.com and on iTunes. Just search for Comic Book Tesseract and you'll find us there. On Twitter, I am at FelixTCat. Jason is at JPolyeff. Our email address is comicbooktesseract@gmail.com. And we have a Google voicemail account, so you can dial 50-TESSERACT. That's 508-377-3722. Leave us a voicemail or a text. Well, like I said, that's it for this week. I'm Justin Chupka. I'm half of Jason Polyev. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week on the Comic Book Test.